Marriage confers many privileges and financial incentives. But when you're looking at a second, third, or fourth marriage, those benefits and responsibilities you've accumulated previously can become entangled at another chance at love and happiness. Helping us dodge the piercings of financial arrows when Cupid strikes again are the Cash Money Crew, Sandy Weaver, Dave Jackson, and Alex Petrovic, and they represent the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City. First, what are the financial and other benefits of actually getting married beyond the emotional part? Like, why should I even consider getting married in the first place? Alex.
Well, there are some tax benefits. And secondly, it's the acceptable norm. It makes you part of the sort of so-called community.
Mm-hmm.
So I would start with that.
Yeah, as you say.
Well, it is cheaper for two to live than one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, when we do retirement projections, you know, we don't double expenses if we have two. You know, mm-hmm. they go up some, but they don't go up double.
Well, I mean, can you be a little bit more specific about, like, what do I gain by getting married? For example, I've been living with my girlfriend for over a year now, and we're sharing pretty much everything right
yeah.
down the middle. But being married has, you know, like, we just did our taxes. Would I have seen some magical return just by the simple fact of going and getting married?
Yeah, you would have probably had a better deal on your tax return. But think of it, you're also just paying one apartment rent or, mm-hmm. you know, mortgage. You know, so you save that way, too.
Mm-hmm.
There's less food wasted in the kitchen. You know, there's a whole
but
lot of
things. But he's shacking up, so he's getting all those benefits. I guess the one that you're asking, though,
yeah.
would be Social Security would be the biggest one, you know, because as a married couple, now you're receiving spousal benefits. And so if you predecease your spouse, she may be able to take advantage of some of your Social Security benefits or vice versa.
Which I hope doesn't happen anytime soon.
You hope it doesn't. But,
yeah,
I don't think anybody should really get married just for the financial mm-hmm. stake that's going to, whether it's going to make a positive or negative out of your financial situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're looking for trouble then.
Yeah, exactly. That's not the best proposal ever. I could really use this tax break.
Yeah, exactly. I'm needing an extra tax deduction. Come on, honey. Let's.
Yeah.
Estate planning, you would gain by that when you reap your first millions.
Yeah, okay.
You would be able to leave, you know, pass on your legacy, your financial legacy easier.
You know it so well, the Long Middleton fortune.
There you go.
Me.
There you go.
But how often do clients come to you guys with questions before they've ever gotten married? Is it usually something that people are even considering doing? Like, I mean, like, I think you get so wrapped up in the love and the ceremony and the religious and, you know, social side of it. I mean, do people come to you guys?
I think all the time.
It depends. We had a really large client who was fearful of getting married, and then we kind of talked about it because her lover had a lot of debt. Mm. And this was their second marriage, and they were, you know, in their late 40s. And then we got an email that says, well, we're in Europe celebrating our marriage, and we thought, wow. You know, so they don't always, you know. Sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't.
Mm-hmm. Sandy, you were saying it seems like it happens often.
Yeah, our clients, you know, they say, you know, we're dating and we're thinking about getting serious. And so, you know, immediately the topics in the review meeting start going down the list. You know, what changes, what do you need to think about? We're pretty much in from the get-go. I don't know why, but yeah.
Yeah, she's got a different set of clients than me.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I've had a few clients that have come to me that have said, their minister recommended that they get seek counsel of a financial advisor before they got married to start getting there. But I'd say that's the exception, not the rule in my case.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kansas City, have you been married more than once? Did the second marriage complicate you or your previous spouse's or your new spouse's finances? Are you considering getting married again but wonder what to broach in terms of the asset question? Join our conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You could also email us. Our address is centralstandard@kcur.org. And you can also find us on Twitter. Our handle is KCURCST. And so what are the common financial challenges that somebody experiences when they get divorced? I mean, that can be very, very messy. And like, how does that kind of parlay into, you know, second or third marriages? Is it kind of an example of like, if you handle the divorce well, that can set you up nicely for any future relationships that you embark on? Like, is that a very important part of it, Sandy?
I don't know. Usually divorce, typically both parties are going to end up poorer financially than they were before. And so you have that baggage that you carry with you. The other thing, though, is when you go into a second marriage, and gosh, I think, you know, half of the U.S. goes into a second marriage, you have paused then. Do I want to make sure that I don't end up losing more if this second marriage doesn't,
right,
you know, because then my financial standard will really go down.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to be careful and considerate, yet you want to balance that at the same time with, you know, you found this wonderful person. And so, you know, a lot of it then is perhaps not a prenup. We had one client, for example, they didn't really have an agreement in their prenup, but what they did was fully disclose assets and debts. And so they, you know, they got married and knew that there were no ugly surprises on either side.
Wait a second. So these people, I'm sorry. I just find this kind of.
Okay.
For me, I know everything about. I mean, my girlfriend and I have been dating for like 8 years, but like I know everything about like her finances, and she knows everything about mine. Are there people who honestly get into like a romantic relationship, but like and get very serious, but like never broach the topic of like how are you doing financially?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And sometimes it's just they broach it. They really don't get into it in any kind of real detail, like Sandy's suggesting, where you put everything down in paper and say, hey, this is where I am right now.
Well, okay. It never done it in paper, but that's all the prenup was just like, we want to know this about each other.
Yes, yes.
But the prenup doesn't go far enough, which it is essential, in my opinion, for second marriages. And if somebody doesn't want to do a prenup, I think that should give one of the, you know, the lovers pause. But the prenup is just a start, because that just says here's what I have, here's what I'm, you know, agree to keep is mine or not, or commingled, kind of a starting place. But it's really getting to know each other in terms of their financial beliefs,
mm-hmm.
what baggage do they bring in about what they think about money,
mm-hmm.
And then to acknowledge those and then start a financial planning process together.
Mm-hmm.
So the prenup, you know, sets the stage,
mm-hmm.
but it does not foretell the future.
But let me say also that a lot of times a prenup stops the marriage, because, you know, that comes up in a conversation. A lot of times one or the other is saying, well, if you feel that way, that means you're going into this marriage thinking we're going to get
Don't
divorced.
Don't you trust me, David?
Yeah,
Don't
exactly.
you trust me?
So sometimes that creates its own problem. So it's not a simple, simple
mm-hmm.
matter.
No, you're right. It does. But that starts at least a conversation.
Right.
So how many marriages have you guys stopped by suggesting your clients that they get prenuptial agreements?
We haven't stopped any, but I can think of two clients where there wasn't full financial disclosure before the second marriage, and they hired us after they got married. So, but there were small sources of contention in the relationship because of unpleasant surprises. And perhaps, you know, just full disclosure and then discussing, you know, how are we going to handle this to make it fair for both of us?
Right.
Mm-hmm. That conversation never happens. And so then there's this lingering contention that you just sort of have.
Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest obstacles is obviously second marriages. And I saw a statistic that 40% of all marriages are second marriages. Is second marriages with children from previous marriages.
Oh, it gets really complicated.
Yeah,
whoa.
Yeah.
Now you start really, you know, getting all across the board. And if you don't start out right on that one, then good luck.
Now, you use a lot of vague, you know, words there, like start out right on that one. And by that, I mean, I suspect you're saying, like, you know, how much, like, are you talking about, like, a conversation about, you know, my children from the previous marriage, I want to do this for them. Like this being like, you know, I want to take them on vacations. I want to do, you know, I want to pay for their college. I want to, you know, give them gifts, like conversations like that, making that like explicitly clear to your new partner about like
exactly.
what your expectations are.
And it doesn't stop with children under 21 either.
That's true.
Yeah, I've, you know, seen horrible problems with 30 and 40 year old children. Because then you have grandchildren, and are we going to gift to them? So those are real emotional issues when you're talking about your own children from a previous marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the statistic, but I know second marriages are high with, you know, children with a previous marriage. And how are you going to leave those inheritances to?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, again, what we're talking about is talking these about these items before you get married. Because once you're married, you know, it's kind of tough to get unmarried.
Well, you're legally, like, essentially, you know, like you're one person, essentially, you know, in the eyes of the law. You're filing taxes right. jointly, you know, like
yeah,
in many
your
ways.
Your team, your partnership.
Yeah, yeah, you're it's quite a partnership, and it's one that legally you have to take legal action to get out of in the case of divorce.
Yeah.
David?
Well, I wanted to kind of set a scenario that just is really common, and let's just say me and Sandy decide to get married later in life, and we've both been married before, and we have our own kids. And so Alex is our financial advisor, and he's done a great job of helping me accumulate wealth. And so when, you know, I want to say, well, Sandy will inherit my wealth when I go.
Mm-hmm.
And but I also want to make sure I leave some to my kids, too. But
of course.
I don't do any kind of planning. So after this great marriage with Sandy, I pass away, and Sandy can't live without me because I'm such a wonderful husband. So, so shortly after I pass away, she goes too.
Your laughter, I'm sure, is hurting David.
Yeah, she's trying to mess with my
ear. Where is this going?
I'm okay with that. But so when she passes away, my stuff that I left to her may get left to her children, mm-hmm. and nothing goes to my children if we haven't done some kind of planning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it would be kind of a tragic event for my kids. And
right.
it would be nothing that she did wrong. It's just the fact that due to failure to plan.
So what you're saying is like when you get married, like I feel like this is something that's a little weird. Is that like marriage like has a lot of default settings, right?
Yes.
Like
right.
like for example, like once I get married, like the default is if I haven't selected on my life insurance policy or on pensions or on anything, like the default is it goes to the spouse, correct? Like in the eyes of the law, like it doesn't matter, you know, who else lays claim. It's the default is that everything goes to the spouse, right?
Actually,
or does it get complicated?
That runs by state law, and actually, I think it's 1/3, 2/3. 1/3 goes to your spouse, 2/3 to your kids, or half and half. Something.
But
and we're talking
state,
biological
yeah.
children,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
right. And what happens in most states when those children are from a second marriage and a first marriage? Like, is it two-thirds then divided amongst all of that net group?
I don't know the answer to
it
that.
It gets complicated.
Yeah.
I know that. It's
complicated, which comes back to why you should probably have a conversation.
Yes.
About
yeah, that's
it.
Why you need to have the conversation.
Well, Thomas called in, and Thomas from Overland Park, he called 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Thomas, welcome to Central Standard.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate your show. I always love listening to Central Standard. My call is more of a question/comment because I don't know if your advisors know the answer to this, but now that most or a lot of relationships are started online, I was on Match.com the other day, and I don't remember them asking me anything about finances when, you know, selecting potential matches. I was just wondering, I think it would be good to incorporate this sort of information into these dating websites now that so many relationships are started online. And actually, I don't know if they do, so I guess that's my question part, or just the comment part is, I think it would be good. I really appreciate your show. I'm going to listen offline.
Okay, thank you, Thomas. Have a great day.
Interesting question.
I mean, the number one thing couples fight about, I believe, is money. It goes above,
I thought
you know,
it was sex, but I know they're real close.
I think it's money, time, and sex, and you know, like, and it makes sense because I mean, what do we argue about as a nation all the time is money because it is the tangible way we demonstrate what it is we value, right?
Yes. True.
And so Thomas had a really good point there. I mean, but something we very rarely like to talk about. In relationships, Sandy?
It's true that relationships are easier if there's some kind of close financial parity between the partners.
Mm-hmm.
If not, then you need to make arrangements so that you each end up satisfied with how this is going to work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the interesting things that comes out of that is when you're talking about first marriages, usually you're talking about younger couples who really don't have a whole lot. But that second marriage is when you've been out in the workforce for a while, you've had a chance to accumulate some assets. Now it gets a little bit more complicated because you really do have stuff that comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have debt that comes into play.
I was just going to get to that. What about debt? What happens to my debt when I'm getting paired up with somebody? Just because I've never done this before, marriage, that is, does the debt become like – You both have different credit scores, but essentially because you're both applying for the same loans, for example, on a house or an automobile, like essentially your spouse could either help or hurt your
exactly.
your credit
yes.
worthiness,
mm-hmm.
Sandy?
Yes, that happens. And you also need to be careful on your accounts. If you have debts, and I just, for example, I would put you on as a joint owner on my accounts, that's not good. Because if you stop paying, you know, your creditors then can come after my account because your name is on it.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be careful in some of those aspects.
Mm-hmm. I've seen instances where applying for a mortgage where because if one spouse had some issues,
right.
It was better not to include that spouse. And,
right.
and a good mortgage banker, you know, will help you with that. But where one of the spouses applied just on their credit alone,
mm-hmm.
got a better rate. Than the two of them together.
Than the two
it
of them
depends.
Together. But you would lose in that example, like their income, for example, like
yeah, that's
you know,
a good
like
point.
that if you like you know if you're making X amount of dollars
correct.
A month, you know, you may not get as big of a loan as you were hoping
right.
for because you've lost that. So you kind of have to play that gamble a
yeah.
little bit.
Yeah, and even with the debt, it's like you know, just because the spouse has debt. Doesn't mean when you get married, you have that debt, but
mm-hmm.
it does affect the family budget now because they have to pay that debt.
Of course. Okay, we're going to take a really short break, and when we return, we'll continue our conversation on financial implications of getting married again. Central Standard will return in just a few moments.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, online at kcur.org. Good morning, I'm Linda Scher. Coming up on the next Fresh Air, an author discusses her new memoir. She's 81 years young and refers to the book as The View from Old Age. Find out more, including what dancing fish have to do with it, on Fresh Air this afternoon at 3. Central Standard is made possible in part by the UMKC Block School of Management, offering a master's degree in public administration to prepare students for a career in urban policy, nonprofit management, or health administration. Registration for information sessions is online at umkc.edu/MPA. The time is 10:41. It's 31 degrees right now in Midtown Kansas City. Sunny skies today with a high around 56. Partly cloudy tonight with a low of 40. We now return to Central Standard right here on KCUR.
Welcome back to Central Standard, and I'm Matthew Law Milton, and we're joined by the Cash Money crew here this morning. Sandy Weaver, she's from Financial Security Advisors, Dave Jackson, Waldell and Reed Financial Advisors, and Alex Petrovic from Petrovic Financial Services, and they all are coming here on to represent the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City. And I'd like to start off here with a call from Susie in Overland Park. Susie, thank you for calling, and welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thanks very much. I would just really like to encourage people who are looking at a second marriage to get a prenuptial. Personally, I did decide to do that. And I can understand where it may not be a very romantic part of the courtship, if you will. But I really kind of saw it the way you might see car insurance. You know, you don't hope that you get into an accident, but if you do, there's some kind of a net there for you, financial net.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of saw it like financial insurance, if you will, if the marriage were to break up. And as it turned out, the marriage did break up. And
I'm sorry to hear that, Susie.
Well, yeah.
Oh, although I imagine if it did, you did it for good reason, you know, like, yeah.
Absolutely. And it was a very amicable kind of breakup. And it had been after many, many, many years. And often people going into a second marriage might be in a financial situation where they have 401ks building up and maybe their own personal finances are building up. And so without the prenuptial, I probably would have been very, I would have given second thoughts about ending the marriage because I would have been financially almost destitute without the prenuptial.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, from a legal standpoint, a lot of the questions are already answered, and so the legal expenses weren't as much because it's all there in the prenup.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what people need to understand is that both people are agreeing to the prenup.
Mm-hmm.
when they enter into a prenup. So essentially, it protects both individuals.
Mm-hmm. Susie, how did you open up that conversation with your previous husband?
Well, we talked about everything, and that was one of them. And it was difficult, but I'm the one who brought up the subject, and he was very much open to it. And we talked to an attorney, and the attorney explained it all. And we went into it thinking, oh, this will never happen, and it's fine. We both agreed to what we had agreed to. But if anybody's been divorced, what you realize is the person you marry is not the person you divorce. It's nice having the prenuptial, because then you don't get into a lot of ugly disputes and arguments while you're, in addition to going through the divorce,
mm-hmm.
or as part of the divorce process. You don't get into all that ugliness because the prenup has already made those decisions for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Susie, thanks so much for the call and sharing your experience. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for the program.
Yeah. And so, she was talking about, like, there are solutions out there, and a prenuptial agreement, as we discussed, is one of them. And it sounds like Susie was saying, it made the entire relationship perhaps even better, because, like, even the conclusion of that second marriage for her, it sounded like was easier because she had gotten into that prenup. Are there other solutions, Sandy, when we're thinking about, not all the dangerous landmines you can encounter when you're considering an additional marriage?
Right. Well, let's say that you marry somebody who has student debt, significant student debt.
Most people,
a lot of that. So what you might decide when you're splitting up who pays for what and who enjoys what, it might be that there is X amount of discretionary income on both sides, and then you agree to both fund, household expenses. Well, one in the discretionary income pot, the one person with the student debt, the agreement may be that student debt payment comes out of that discretionary income pot. That's one solution. Another one is we have a couple where he has a huge investment portfolio. She has a great defined benefit pension plan from the state of Missouri. And they are living in his house. And this is a long-term second marriage. But sometimes, this is not exactly their situation, sometimes, though, the concern would be who gets that house, when he dies. Would it be his kids versus hers? And what you can do is what's called a life estate. If he goes in a car accident first, she can continue to live in the house to the end of her days. And then at her death, it goes to his kids.
So, is that something – but you have to, like, go to a lawyer, to a CPA? Who do you have to go to get such a
lawyer,
a thing?
A lawyer, an estate planning attorney.
Estate plan. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's a common solution. It solves that problem very easily.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. David?
Well, and it's like in the example that I used previously, I could set up where Sandy would be the beneficiary, or my spouse would be the beneficiary of my assets while she's alive, and then at her death, they come back to my kids. So there are ways to – pre-plan your estate to make sure that you're benefiting the people that you really want to. Sometimes I have found dealing with couples that sometimes that is a difficult conversation to have. It's just difficult to.
Is it the difficult part about it is like because you start to quantify like
yes.
how much you care about someone in a way.
It's
like,
kinda,
at least that's the way it's internalized. Like I actually love you 1/25th as much as I love you. Like someone else. Is that what makes it difficult?
Yes, in a way. But on the other hand, if you are paying a financial planner, that's part of their job to bring that conversation up and help you through that process.
Mm-hmm. Do you usually suggest that people come in as a couple when they do that? Or do you kind of like break it into teams, be like, what do you want? What do you want? And then like kind of come together and like.
Well, I prefer that they come in as a couple, mm-hmm. but I do run into situations where they don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
They just say, hey, no, I just want to work on my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, sometimes I think in the back of my head, well, that's a recipe for, disaster down the road. But, the client is in charge. They're the boss.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Alex?
Yeah, well, I think we get back to the premise again is that, you know, if the two of them are doing a good job, they may include you on all of it, or maybe they could have two different advisors as well. So our job is to just alert them to here's some of the issues you need to talk about, and hopefully that they'll, you know, work with us or their other advisor or amongst themselves. But, you know, there are going to be differences. Hmm. That's a guarantee there's going to be differences. So I think the first step is willing to accept those differences and then figure out a plan to deal with them. Mm-hmm. Because you can have differences of income, as Sandy was talking about. One makes twice as much as the other. Well, then how do you split the bills of the house? You know, some, and so you talk about those things. Every one of these things has a solution if they're really committed. But you need to identify them up front. Or another thing is like windfall. If we get a windfall, what are we going to do with it? You know, in the old days, Mrs. might had one idea and Mr. might had another one. One is a house in the Ozarks, and the other one is, you know, a motorboat, you know, that only seats one.
Yeah. Well, you know, it got me to thinking about the lady that called in about the prenup. It sounded like they were a couple of equals, mm-hmm. and both of them had assets and, you know, their own mm-hmm. stuff. And so a prenup in that situation is probably really more simple to do. But let's just say you have the one spouse that has a ton of assets and high income and the other doesn't, then you're not talking about a party of equals. And then when you have that prenup conversation, it becomes, okay, what are you trying to do here? You know, mm-hmm. what is this all about? Mm-hmm. And it makes it a lot more complicated.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM, KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Matthew Law Middleton, and our guests are Sandy Weaver, Dave Jackson, and Alex Petrovic. They represent the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City. And we're talking about the financial implications of getting married again. And Kansas City, have you been married more than once? Did your second marriage complicate your previous spouse's or your new spouse's or your finances? Are you considering getting married again but wonder how to do it? Join our conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You could also email us. Our address is centralstandard@kcur.org. And we're going to go now to Ashley in Kansas City, Missouri. Ashley, welcome to Central Standard.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. And thank you so much for the show.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I see here you have something about loans you want to talk about.
Yes, so you were speaking earlier about student loans. My husband is looking at going back to school and taking on quite a bit of debt as a result. So I kind of have two questions. Number one is, to what degree do I have to participate in those loans? Do we take those loans on as a couple, or does he take them on as an individual? And then, you know, God forbid he were to die or we were to have a divorce, to what degree does that debt then become my responsibility as well?
Great questions, Ashley. Great questions. Sandy?
Well, I have done way in the past a little bit of expert witness in divorce cases. So if the debt is accumulated while you're married, even if his name is on it, most likely, and I'm not a divorce attorney, but you could probably check that with a family law attorney, most likely the debt will be considered joint debt because of when it came into being.
Mm-hmm. Because, like, again, you're like two people eyes of the law because you're married. So even though in this case, you know, like, Matthew Law Middleton went back to UMKC, you know, to become a sonogrammatician. You know, he, you know, like that would be our debt, my girlfriend and mine's debt. And so, yeah.
Likewise, if assets grow while you're married, you know, that appreciation gets split too.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. I guess that the debt would be combined.
Yeah.
I was thinking not. Well, my initial thought was if he's the one who signed the loan, then it's his debt, not hers. But no. Yeah, I guess once it goes through the probate process or whatever, the creditors are going to come after whatever is there as a couple.
Yeah, it's just a family law in terms of how they see that.
And is that just a Missouri or a Kansas thing, or is that a pretty much most places in your experience? I know that I'm asking you to talk for the whole union here, but
I'm just familiar with Missouri and Kansas, but I would imagine
similar rules apply. Mm-hmm. And what about, like, big liabilities like mortgages? That's a lot of money, and it's the home, and like, there can be a lot of debt there that has to be decided upon, particularly, like, if, you know, you want to move in with someone, you know, that you get married, and they have an outstanding mortgage on their home. How does that work, Alex?
Well, I'm not sure about how the circumstances would be. I'd have to have a little more details on that, because if you became a part of that mortgage – you know, and I'm not sure, really. I guess
it does become interesting, though, where when one spouse owns the house and then they get married and bring in the other, it's like, okay, so is this now a joint property, or am I going to put your name on the mortgage and the title, or is it still going to be my house? And
you have to have a discussion about commingling assets
and how
that can happen.
What is that word?
Commingling assets.
Is that a term that's used in financial like planning?
Right.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, we have a case this year. A client got married, and the husband is doing a lot of work on the house. And so the house is in her name alone, but yet he has, through equity, increase the appreciation on that house.
Right.
And so he has now incurred elements of ownership because of it.
So like so what does that mean? Like he owns the granite countertops that he installed, or like?
But yeah,
I'm taking this with me when I leave.
Another example is an inheritance after you're married.
Mm-hmm.
Once you inherited $500,000, and then you dropped it into the joint account.
Exactly,
yeah.
that's commingling.
Yeah, that's a good example.
So now it's both of yours.
So now it's marital assets, whereas before it was just that one spouse that inherited its assets.
And can prenuptial agreements proactively handle this kind of thing? For example, I can't assume when a windfall will happen to me or that it will. Or, can that even be written into the, prenup? Like, all future assets X will happen to, can you even, plan that way? Or is that something you just kind of keep having a conversation about?
Well, it goes more to commingling. We have three women who hired us when they were young and inherited, and all three have since gotten married and have children, and they're great to work for. But we have this discussion, if you put the other person's name on this investment account, if you let the other person contribute or deposit into this account, then it becomes commingled. It's no longer a separate inherited asset.
Mm-hmm.
And most state statute says for inherited assets that have not been commingled, that have been maintained separately, those go with the partner who inherited those.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's so interesting, because it seems to be kind of counterintuitive what you were talking about earlier about student debt. Like that happens together.
Yeah, but that was arising while they were married.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And even the inheritance. So if you inherit while you're married, most state statutes leave that alone. So if you don't commingle it, it's yours
if you were to go.
So it is kind of counterintuitive to what she said before. But so if you think about as a house, if you inherit a house and your spouse is not all of a sudden owner of that house too, but if you sell the house and take the cash and put it in your joint bank account, then now this is a marital asset. And if we get divorced, we're splitting that down the middle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to turn now to the phones. Joe from Kansas City, Missouri, he's calling in with a question about an upcoming marriage for yourself. Is that correct, Joe?
That's right.
Yeah, all right. Go ahead. Good morning. Welcome.
Get a prenup.
Thanks a lot for taking my call. So this is a little variant on what you've been speaking about. I'm expecting to get married soon. And
congratulations.
Thank you very much. So I have a solid income, the salary and benefits, and I don't have much in the way of assets, which I sacrificed in my divorce. But and she's in the exact opposite situation. She at this point has she was recently laid off and has pretty much no income, but a fair amount of equity in her house,
mm-hmm.
which she would be selling because she would be moving from North Carolina to Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your quick kind of thoughts about how we would kind of view our joint situation?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How to approach that? No, thanks, Joe. Stay with us.
Well, they got to talk about it, because when she sells the house, that's her money. That was her house. So once she puts that into a new house together, that would be commingled. There's the word again.
Mm-hmm.
So that, again, they need to have that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing.
I mean, that really is an interesting example, because as he mentioned, she doesn't have income. So she's going to have this asset, but she has no income. So if, he's paying all the bills, but she's sitting on this chunk of money and she keeps it, oh, no, this is just my money. How fair is that? So it is a conversation that definitely needs to be had.
And Joe, have you been able to have that conversation with your bride-to-be?
No, we haven't really got into it, front and center, as you might say. We're both, we've been very open about each of our situations, so I think we pretty much know everything.
Mm-hmm.
But we never really talked about how it would work.
Any advice for Joe on that one?
Yeah, we'd recommend that you put that down on paper. Mm-hmm. Both sides, and sit down at the kitchen table and talk it through how you're going to handle it. There are, you know, about three different ways you can handle that. You know, one of those is how David, you know, just brought up. But you should see it on paper.
All right. And so just one last piece of advice before we go. I mean, what seems to be the take-home message here, Alex?
Well, clearly is planning means doing something before it happens. So talking to one another, planning, lay out the difficulties that they see, and then set up a plan.
Just real quickly, David, Sandy?
Well, my wife always tells me, communication.
Mm-hmm. And
same thing, lay it all down in paper and go through all the different areas affected.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank our guests, Sandy Weaver, Financial Security Advisors, Dave Jackson from Waldo and Reed Financial Advisors, Alex Petrovic from Petrovic Financial Services. And again, they're all here for the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City. You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows at kcur.org/Central Standard. Tomorrow, Central Standard returns, and we'll be talking about Hickman Mills, their new superintendent, and regional day trips just in time for spring break. Up to Date is next, and it's a conversation about why girls are winning the gender wars and what parents can do to help their boys catch up. I'm Matthew Law Milton. This is Central Standard on KCUR.
In a little wedding chapel, later on that afternoon, an old upright piano plays that old familiar tune.
Tears roll down her cheeks, and happy thoughts run through her head as he whispers low with this ring, I've been wed.